You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz, the 13th of October. An incredible practice yesterday. Offense, is there a way Quinn can make this team score? And predictions from numbers geeks, do we buy them? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. You can get it on, well, I hope, on Android, iTunes, TuneIn, your Alexa, your Google Home, whatever it is, this is available for you. Thanks so much for tuning in. Now, we yesterday had a huge move on the network, moved some of our main shows over to Megaphone, a new format for us. Really excited for the partnership with Malcolm Gladwell's place that they have their podcast, Panoply. Big day. It does not entirely seem to be going perfectly. And if you're having a hard time getting the show, please let me know, either Facebook, Twitter, at Locked On Sports, David Locke, or Locked On Sports on Facebook, or just email me at dlock09@gmail.com. Let me know if you had a problem so we can try to address it. I want to dig right into the show. I do want to welcome another new sponsor onto the show. The Advocates are joining us. I went over to their cool office in downtown. Actually, they're not quite in downtown. They're right in that area that's exploding of popularity between Salt Lake and the University of Utah, and sat down with them and was super impressed with the efficiency by which they get things done. It was cool, really, really cool to see how businesses work in that regard. Today's show also brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. Interesting business stuff going on with Blake and Murdoch Hyundai at 4646 South State Street. I'll tell you a little bit about that coming up. All right, yesterday's practice, I always have to be a little careful of what I reveal. The Jazz are so great to me that they allow me to go in and see these practices. I got to share, yesterday was one of those days where you're just incredibly, well, I think I'm pretty pleased to be in the building every day. But every now and then there's a day where it's a basketball 101 session. You feel like you've just learning a ton. The players yesterday were totally engaged. The effort level was through the roof. It was a hard practice. One of the hardest conditioning NBA practices I've seen in some time. Some old school stuff, even a free throw shooting contest at the end to prevent having to run again. And some team interesting aspects to that, the way Quinn did it. Again, I apologize. I'm kind of giving you like a piece of the cake, but not necessarily the frosting or however you want to say it. But it was really incredible practice to watch. Quinn opened it up by kind of talking to them about two things that they really needed to work on and improve upon, in his opinion. And then from there, they were interesting because they almost conflicted with each other. So in other words, if one person's working on one of them offensively and the other's working on the other one, which is defensive, they were then absolutely diametrically opposed, that for both of them to do it well at the same time was going to be a convergence of force. And so that kind of set the tone for the practice. And it was really an interesting practice. One thing that was particularly interesting is that Favors and Gobert went head to head a lot. And Derek is moving well and playing well. So you've got two of the better big men in the NBA practicing against each other. The other one is just the level of effort and commitment that these guys went to was really, really high. And it jumped out to me. And then Quinn was on his game is also, and Quinn was completely zeroed in on detail, level of detail. It was really interesting. And Donovan shared a little bit of it afterwards, when he was talking about what it was like to play point guard and how, where you bring the ball up on the floor. If you think of the floor kind of in five lanes, wide left, wide right, middle left and dead middle, or mid left and mid right. So five lane, a lot of these offenses are predicated on where you bring the ball up the floor. some of the point guards in the past years have really struggled with that. And so to watch Quinn working that and teaching it, Ricky gets it pretty intuitively, and then watching Ricky work with it. There was a play where on an early push with Ricky, he had the ball on the left side of the floor all the way wide left, so you can see what he's trying to create with the field. He's got his eye open. He pushes down to the baseline trying to flatten the defense. Nothing's quite there. He takes a step back out, then swirls back on the baseline. His head's now up, and the defense actually at this point widens out because they're aware of Ricky's ability to pass, and he actually flips up a reverse layup up and in. And just the control he had, this understanding of where to be on the floor, he kept the ball all the way to the far sideline and then all the way attached to the baseline the whole time. In a sense, using incredible spacing at that moment for that. And really was truly an awesome effort there by Ricky and what he was just kind of doing that. There were, the other one that jumped out to me yesterday at practice was the depth. And we've talked about this a lot, but Neto didn't practice, so Donovan was, and without Dante, so you're getting thin there. And so Donovan is head up on Ricky when they were kind of going at it. But you had 10 really high-quality players on the floor in the initial, and then they started subbing guys in who are still pretty good. But, I mean, the first group was a really interesting kind of way to watch these guys go head-to-head in battle. But the level of detail that Quinn was on yesterday, the other coaches' involvement, the players' commitment to excellence, the effort level. I mean, I would be curious how much they do today. Like, I thought it was that hard to practice. I thought the guys, and it wasn't necessarily that Quinn made it that hard. It was that the effort level that they put out and the commitment to trying to get better it was clear that, you know, they had finished preseason, they'd had a day off, they were aware of the fact that this regular season was right around the corner. It was pretty, pretty awesome to watch. Today's show is brought to you by Murdoch Hyundai. That is at 4646 South State Street. So I think you hopefully have heard the story by now because you've listened to the show a lot, that I sat down, got to know the Murdoch family, now got to know more of them. In fact, spent some time down at Woods Cross with Tyson down there. And so the first thing I was impressed with was the Murdoch family and how they've passed on over 91 years, this lineage of service and commitment. The other one that's been interesting is getting to know the business model a little bit. So here's, I hope Blake doesn't mind me telling you this. So the way Blake works with Hyundai is that Blake buys all the cars. And so it's not like they're on loan. If he doesn't sell, he just sends them back. Like, he buys all of the cars. So all those cars that are sitting on his lot right now in October need to go because he's got the new ones coming in, and this is his inventory. And if his inventory doesn't go, then he ends up swallowing it. So that's not good for him. So in October, he's got $6,000 off that Santa Fe Sport I drove when I first had the partnership with him and got to know him that I like so much. He's also got, I think, $6,500 off the Sonata right now. So if you're in the market, I'm not going to tell you what car to buy. I just think, let me tell you what's out there. Hyundai's not a brand that I necessarily would have thought of initially. Put it on your list. I was excited to find out yesterday that Alyssa and Robert Davis were down at Murdoch Hyundai and had bought a brand new Tucson. So a shout out, Alyssa. I've known Alyssa for a long time. Her family, the Smiths, are good friends of our family from running around. Alyssa and her sisters used to take care of my kids at various times. So neat to see that they headed down there. So shout out to Robert and Alyssa. Thank you for supporting our sponsors. It's Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. They're also in Logan and in Linden. So Baxter Holmes, ESPN, wrote a great piece on how the Warrior offense was built. He also, it's good dig, good long form. Baxter's really talented to read. It's interesting to me also, there's two things in regards to the Jazz offense this year that I'm wondering about. So the one I've talked about a ton and did yesterday with DJ and PK, or today with DJ and PK, sorry, is the idea that you got Ricky Rubio, Rudy Gobert pick and roll, you've got three shooters, Mitchell, Hood, Hood, Ingles, Johnson, Jarebko, spaced, and that gets hard to guard, that Rudy puts enough pressure on top of the rim. Rubio's a good enough ball handler that if Rudy gets any type of step, Ricky's going to put it up on top of the rim. If Ricky's actually a good enough mid-range shooter, you don't entirely want to leave him, but teams are going to go under on that every time. And that the Jazz are going to be able to possibly, you know, get some action there. And that if a third guy has to come in to chuck Rudy, and make sure you understand, you got a guy in each quarter. You've got somebody lifted weak side, angle left. Let's call it Rudy. Rubio comes off the pick left to right. With Favors, you're moving somebody into another spot somewhere. You're a little clogged here with Favors on the floor. But if Favors is off, which I really think the Jazz will probably spend 28 of their 40 minutes a night at least, 48 minutes a night with a spread floor. So Ricky comes off that pick to the right. Rudy's now rolling down the left lane line. If the guy comes from the corner, it's really the only guy who can come. The guy comes from the corner to give a little chuck to Rudy on his roll because he's shifted over. Frankly, Rudy now could just turn, pick the guy. Rubio's now flinging it over to the left corner for a wide open three. You know, we got to knock that down. Joe's a better right corner shooter. Rodney has got to knock down the corner three. He was pretty good at it last year. If my memory off the top of my head is good. Cephalosha is an okay corner three shooter. Not a great one, but he's an okay one. And so, you know, that play right there gets you looks. It's a very simple, basic premise of the offense. I think it actually might very well be the largest premise of the offense. And so I think that's the first question. The other one that is a question to me is, can Quinn Snyder build and diagram an offense that gets guys looks? Just simply is good enough that it gets guys looks, that there's a uniqueness to what the Jazz do and the way Quinn's directed it, that it gets guys looks. Because we can look at Cephalosha, I think this is a decent example. He's a 35%, 34.5 three-point shooter. He's a 34.6 catch and shoot. Those numbers are not great. Once he's open 4 to 6 feet last year, he just jumps up that little bit to 37%. Okay? And actually wide open, he didn't shoot it well. It's kind of like you wonder why that would be, or those, what's going on with that. And you go to 15-16, and the numbers are very similar. He's 34.1, 34.5 on catch and shoot. And you open it, get him open to 4 to 6 feet, and now all of a sudden he's at 42%. Now, again, for whatever weird reason, when he's 6-plus feet open, he was down to 30%. I don't really know what that is. But you begin to say, all right, wait a sec. If Quinn's got something, and this is a huge burden we're asking Quinn, and maybe this is completely unrealistic, but if you suddenly are able to, either through the pick and roll I just talked about or through movement and action, one of the things in the Baxter Holmes piece was trying to make the defense make as many decisions as possible with movement and seeing if they make a mistake somewhere along the way. That's a lot of what the Jazz are doing too. When you think of an offense in the NBA, I think most often what you think about is the ball going into the post in the old school. Guys like Olajuwon in the post, guys are spaced outside, and you toss out and you get a catch and shoot. Or now in this time, day and age, you're running that pick and roll. Guys are static. They're sitting waiting for the catch and shoot. It's a great play. Catch and shoot three is the best play in the game. And that's what you're creating. If you think about Portland and Damian Lillard and C.J. McCollum, what Terry Stotts has created is he's had Plumlee and now Nurkic, huge bodies, waiting with picks below the three-point line, and McCollum and Damian are coming downhill at that pick full steam. And it's a different aspect than the ball handler, James Harden, pounding at the top, the pick comes set, everything's kind of static. Then James goes, you react defensively. This is CJ and Dame are getting the ball on the move, on a catch and go, and heading downhill into the pick. the Warriors do a little bit of this. I think you're going to see more and more of the Jazz having very little static aspect to what they're doing offensively. And so now you're using the pass, the pick, and movement. And movement, when I say movement, it's not necessarily a guy holding the ball, watching other guys move, and trying to find a cutter. It's the ball hand, the 2B ball handler moving before he catches and creating action and movement and forcing the defense to make quick decisions and to be always reactionary and always on their heels. And that creates looks. And then does that system get you? And we get to the same thing. Rodney Hood, 37% three-point shooter. Get it to be a catch and shoot. He's at 42%. Get it to be open and he's between four, and now include him at the 6 feet, and you suddenly kind of get up to the 39, 40% with him. Like NBA shooters get a little bit better if they're wide open, and we can all talk about how the Jazz can't score. I've heard a lot about it, but when you say that the Jazz can't score, to some extent what you're saying is that, you know, hey, a guy can't beat another guy one-on-one, right? That's a little bit of what we're saying here is that, yeah, you don't really have just Russell Westbrook, James Harden, Kevin Durant. We don't. LeBron, we don't have that. No question that we do not have any of that. So now the question is, can you create a system in where you're dealing with the best players in the world and you're asking them to be able to be on the move, take advantage, have an edge when they get the ball by a step, and is that enough to help them out? And I don't necessarily know the answer, but I think, you know, can you turn Ricky Rubio, who is a 30% three-point shooter, into a 33% three-point shooter because they're open looks? That's the number. 33, not great, but still not bad. If you're in a half-court possession, that's 1 point per possession. That's pretty good, right? And then you deal with your good shooters. So can the Alec Burks on the move tax a defense enough that you're actually getting Joe Johnson the catch and shoot that's maybe static because he's actually waiting in that position, ready for it. And now you're dealing not with 33, turning 31% into 33%. You're taking Joe Johnson, who is a 41% three-point shooter, 42% three-point shooter if it's a catch and shoot, and 46% if he's open. And to me, that's the huge question on the Jazz this year is whether or not there is something Quinn can do with action, with movement, prior and create that same phenomena that is out there for that kind of using the Portland and Golden State model a little bit. I mentioned a new sponsorship. It's the Advocate. I think you've probably heard of the Advocates. They're pretty prominent law firm, deal with predominantly traffic accidents and getting you fair settlements and what you deserve out of those. Here's what I thought was so, you know, I like efficiency, right? The PAC rating, everything is done on efficiency. And that's who Matt is. Matt's the guy who built the Advocates. Obviously the end goal with the Advocates is to get you what you deserve and be there for you along the way. But what they've really done is they've figured out the craft. So they have a 106-step process that they have built over the years, and individuals working, you know, for example, there's an individual in the office whose job is to get the police report. There's another person whose job is to get the medical information. There's another person whose job is to get whatever that next piece from the insurance companies are. And they're mapped out that if you do point two, then point three comes next, and point four comes after that, and point seven comes after that. And it allows their lawyers to spend more time with their clients. It allows you to know exactly where you are in the process. It allows them to be incredibly efficient. It allows them to make sure that when you call in, you talk to a lawyer within 60 seconds. That's the essence of who they are. You're not talking to somebody else. You're dealing with your lawyer because all of these other things are being taken care of so efficiently at the Utah Advocates that you are able to then get the service that you want. 60 seconds you talk to a lawyer. You schedule your case, you go into the system, and then the checklist kicks in. It's pretty incredible. The fact is, on these type of cases, probably about less than 1% of them go to trial. So you need to make sure that you have somebody who understands the process and that the process is efficient. All accidents are different, but the process is the same. Each of you have a different story, a different experience, have a different need. The process is still the same. And they will treat you individually while that process makes, while they take care of that process in a manner that fulfills and gets you the end result you want. The advocates, the injury attorneys, 801-336-4272. 801-336-4272. Feel free to tell them that you heard it here on Locked On Jazz. All right, two predictions are out from Nylon Calculus, and I like Nylon Calculus. Jacob Goldstein does some interesting works. He posted this about 3 weeks ago. I wanted to get. He has a model that, it's like PAC, it's like anything else. You can decide whether you like it or not. He has his system, which is, he's, quote, I have a database of every season played, the first which minutes were tracked, using the 1951 to 52, after finding the most similar players to everyone who played last year and see how those players changed, projected. So he really is using a projected system. He sees the Warriors won at 64, Houston at 58, San Antonio at 55, OKC at 53, Minnesota at 50, Denver at 49, Clippers at 47, and Portland at 43, followed by the Pelicans at 40, the Jazz at 40, Memphis 36, Phoenix, Dallas, Lakers, and Sacramento. So it's interesting. The Thunder, the fourth best of that group. Minnesota, Denver, the Clippers, and then Portland wins this little battle of Portland, New Orleans, Utah that most people see happening, and Utah doesn't make it. Over in the East, Cleveland won, but at under 50. Toronto 2, Boston 3, Milwaukee is 4. The battle for like who sneaks in is interesting. Washington 5, Charlotte 6, Detroit 7, but at 41 wins. Miami at 41 wins is 8. Philadelphia 9 at 37. The Knicks not terrible at 37. Numbers don't love Carmelo. Orlando 36, then Brooklyn, Indiana, Chicago, and Atlanta. The next one, another Nylon Calculus, was done by Andrew Johnson called Highly Plausible Win Projections. He says that after finishing the top of the APBR projection board for 2 years, my projections finished middle of the pack last year, despite having a lower average error rate than prior years and beating both Vegas and 538's Carmelo for the third year in a row. Okay? So here's what he had came out with. In the Eastern Conference, he has Cleveland with 53, Boston 49, Washington 49, Charlotte's his fourth team in. Toronto goes to 5, Miami to 6, Milwaukee to 7, and he has Indiana as 8. So the only difference there is they had Indiana at 29, and he's got Indiana sneaking in, but at 37, and Detroit is the team that they disagree with on who makes the playoffs. The lower element of the East is just bad there. They have then Atlanta or ahead of Orlando. Atlanta winning a little bit more than you'd expect. He does some interesting things with distribution and pinnacle line and where he thinks teams could peak out and things like that and odds of making the playoffs. He does have Boston having the highest potential win, and Indiana has actually skews pretty low on some aspects of their things, the things that could go wrong. Here's what he's got in the West. He's got the Warriors at 69, Houston at 55, the Spurs at 54, Clippers at 54, Minnesota at 47, Oklahoma City at 46, Denver at 43. So again, that's the same lead guys, but they have the Clippers in at 4, which actually I'm not that far off. They have great variance, though, because of their injuries. He has their pinnacle line, which is kind of what I don't quite understand how to explain it to you. The Clippers have the huge variance here of all the teams. They have depth, but they have some oft-injured guys. But he has them coming in at 4th, right behind the Spurs, with Minnesota 5, Oklahoma City 6 at only 46 wins. That would be interesting. Denver at 47, and then 8, he has Utah at 41.3. and a 54% chance of making the playoffs. New Orleans next at 40.5. Portland at 40. Memphis, Dallas, Lakers, Phoenix, Sacramento. I'll finish my pack projections, but my pack projections are going to be really close to this. Really, really close. Actually, I might have New Orleans ahead of Utah for that final spot. But they're the premise of that is very close. The pack ratings just have the Jazz having a really hard time scoring. The guys are going to have years that they didn't have last year. Utah comes out 11th in the Western Conference offensively, and the Pelicans are considerably ahead. My offense in the West has Warriors, Houston, Clippers at 3, Minnesota at 4, San Antonio at 5, Denver at 6, Pelicans at 7, Thunder at 8, Sacramento 9, Portland 10, and Utah at 11, tied with Dallas. So Pack will prop, though the defensive numbers may get the Jazz there overall. All right, that is today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Thanks very much for tuning in. If you're having a hard time getting it, you've got it. Thank you. If you took an extra effort, please tell me what you did and where it was you had that experience. We'll try to straighten these things out over the weekend. Thanks to the advocates. If you need it, if you're in a car accident and you need an attorney, this is the system that you want to experience with. They will take care of you for every last detail in their system, take care of all the things that you need to have done. The advocates, UtahAdvocates.com, 801-336-4272. And to Murdoch Hyundai, 4646 South State Street. Go tell Blake. Stop in, say hi to Blake, and say, I hear you need to get inventory off your table. That is today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Locked On NBA has the Western Conference preview number 2 up. Go grab it.